Hello and welcome to episode 28 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Welcome to this episode of Engaging Internal Comms. We've got this week's episode. We've got one more episode next week on the 22nd of December. And then finally, our final episode of this year and of season one will be on the 29th of December. So I mentioned this last week. We are going to bring season one to a close at the end of the year. And we're going to start season two first week back in 2021 on the 5th. There'll be our first episode back in season two. And after that, as I mentioned last week, if you missed it, we are going to be going on to a fortnightly show pattern. That will be the main interview shows and then interspersed with those occasionally, not every week, between the interview shows, you may get a shorter podcast with just me, sharing some news or information with you that I think you'll find of value. So next week, we have an interview, our Christmas special interview is with Jen Sproul. For those of you who are involved in the Institute of Internal Communications, Jen will need no introduction. Jen is the chief exec of the Institute of Internal Comms. Great personality, really fantastic leader of that organization. And Jen is going to be telling us all about what she has learned and what we've probably all learned from 2020 and what we can look forward to in 2021 as internal communicators. So we've already recorded that interview and it was a brilliant and very fitting end to our Christmas special is going to be on the 22nd December. So I hope you're going to be around to listen to that. And really looking forward to putting that one out there next week. So just finally, if you've not already done so, if you could subscribe to the show via your podcast platform, that would be absolutely wonderful. And if this is your first time you've listened to the Engaging Internal Comms podcast, you can catch up with all of the previous episodes on your podcast platform or on our website, which is engagingic.com, where you can also leave us some feedback and join our mailing list and find the link to our Facebook group. So that's all for me, my introduction. Now we'll move on to this week's interview. I always think it's interesting when you've been working in an area for a while and then suddenly someone comes along and actually gives you a name for that work that you've been doing that you've never actually labeled it as yourself. And that happened to me recently when I was listening to another podcast where I came across someone talking about a concept known as employee alignment. Now, we probably all think, so it sounds fairly obvious what that is. But it was really interesting for me because I've worked in employee engagement, internal communications, learning and development for the last 20, 25 years, but I've never explicitly use this term of employee alignment. Yes, we've talked about alignment, talked about making sure we've got all of our people's noses pointing in the same direction, you know, aligned workforces. But as an actual body of work and as a field of not just study, but actually practice as well, employee alignment was something that I never really, you know, used as a label or as a term. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I've managed to get the same person who I'd heard on the other podcast to show up on our show, which is great. So we're going to be talking about this idea of employee alignment and three different elements to employee alignment that we're going to be talking about. This idea of how do we get strategic intent, so there's alignment across the strategic intent within the organization, how do we align our people to that strategic intent, but then also how do we align our people to each other in terms of the way that they work and operate. And our speaker, our interviewee today is going to be not only telling us about the conceptual elements of that, but also looking at how practically we can measure alignment within our organizations and then take steps to improve it. Because as we probably all recognize, alignment is key to getting people engaged in the first place. So that's what today's interview is all about. I hope you enjoy it. So my interview today is Lindsay Outenbogard. Lindsay is director at Mirror Mirror, which is an employee alignment consultancy based in the Netherlands. Prior to that, Lindsay held senior IC roles at Shell, T-System, Vion, and FEMS. Lindsay also worked in micro businesses prior to that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that because I think that was pivotal in the topic that we're going to be talking about today. So, hello, Lindsay. How are you?
Hello there. Yes, fine. Thanks very much. Nice to be in on a Friday afternoon.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't beat a Friday afternoon podcast. I always like recording a podcast on a Friday afternoon. So there's a certain level of enthusiasm for life that tends to come out in the conversation. So I said you're in the Netherlands. Which part of the Netherlands are you in?
Yeah, so I'm in Delft, which is next to The Hague in the Netherlands, which is a sort of very mini cute Amsterdam without the dodgy tourists.
Yes. Yeah. And well known for its beautiful porcelain, I believe, Delft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. So Mirror Mirror, tell us all about Mirror Mirror. I nearly said, well, Mirror Mirror. It's a fantastically evocative name. Well, tell us all about Mirror Mirror and what do you do and the services that you offer to your clients?
Yeah, sure. So, I used to work in, as you said, in employee communications, and I just kind of got to the stage when I was working in large organizations where I'd sort of look around the team and, you know, half of them are flying off somewhere, half of them don't get the emails that you've sent, or at least they say they haven't. and, you know, everybody's on a kind of the same page, but not quite. And the employee communications that were coming down from above my level just didn't seem really to be that relevant. They were, you know, useful. They helped set context, but they didn't really make a difference to what people were doing, thinking, feeling, etc., except for the fact that they would belong. Maybe they inspired some confidence. And I looked around my team, I thought, wouldn't it be brilliant if there was a way of kind of comparing what we're all thinking so that we can see where we are together? And at a certain point in my career, you know, if you've got an idea and you're persistent like I am, you don't drop an idea, you just hold on to it. I just thought, right, I'm just going to start investigating this. And so that was about 4 years ago. And so what Mirror Mirror does, we've built some software, we've built up a network of 120 practitioners in about 17, I think now, different countries. Mirror Mirror is a tool and a process. So that the tool identifies and measures alignment gaps by basically capturing the way that people perceive their context at work and comparing them at the team level, so that you can see where the common ground and differences are. Because a lot of alignment gaps are completely invisible. They're under the surface. How do you know if you're aligned with somebody just through, you know, especially if you haven't even got a chance to get a meeting with them, or say, given the time of day, or even be in the same room as them these days? So we issue, for a start, an alignment report that helps people see where the alignment gaps are. And then the second part of what Mirror Mirror does is a process, a dialogue process, to help people address those gaps, and that by getting clarity, or it could be by agreeing to disagree, or it could be by building bridges between two different perspectives. But it's a very powerful way, let's just call it an alignment process. It's a very powerful way of getting clarity and engagement and ownership about that data and inclusivity about what are we going to do next.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. So I mean, it was really, that's kind of links into how I you know, came across you. I heard you speaking on another podcast, which was a really great interview that you had there, and you were talking about this concept of employee alignment. And for me, it was a bit like one of those aha moments, which is, you know, I've always considered myself, or for the last 20 years anyway, working in what I define as employee engagement and internal communications. But then I realized when you were talking about it, actually what I've actually been working in is employee alignment, because that's much more of an accurate definition of, I think, of the work that I've been doing anyway. So and what struck me is that I think alignment, I think sometimes we, you know, alignment isn't something we, you know, employee engagement, internal comms, they're, you know, kind of, everybody kind of knows roughly what we're talking about. Okay, it can be a definitional issue around that. But employee alignment is something that isn't always overtly talked about, as far as I'm aware, you know, in the types of communities that I'm in, isn't, but also sometimes just seen as a consequence of engagement. But I think what I heard from you, and I'd like to explore this with you here, is that actually alignment is a precursor to engagement. It's not something that comes as a result of engagement. You actually need alignment before you can get engagement. So I'd like to just explore this definition of what we mean about employee alignment, and then how does that feed into the sort of, you know, the next stage, which is then once I'm aligned, I'm much more, when I'm in a position to be engageable, I guess. So just if it'd be really helpful, I think, just to understand that alignment piece, because I guess it's almost like self-definitional, but actually I think it's more subtle than that. And I know looking on the internet, there are multiple definitions of it. So let's start with that definitional thing about employee alignment.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, I'm still struggling slightly with the terminology because, you know, alignment is something that people do when they have a conversation. I mean, alignment is something that people in garages do when they align the wheels of a car. But I like to think about alignment from an organizational perspective on three levels. So just to clarify this bit first, the top level of alignment in an organization would be about alignment of the enterprise to the strategic intent, which really hasn't got a lot to do with employees fundamentally, because we're talking about strategy, architecture, systems, capability, purpose. That's a very much a kind of top level alignment of the organization so that there is a strategic frame in which employees can operate. Let's put it that way.
Right. So that's like having our ducks in a row in terms of, you know, making sure our systems and processes are pointing in the same direction.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, employees have got a lot of influence in how inputs that they can provide to affect what that looks like in the sort of employee voice kind of way. But in all sense and purposes, it's not really a people alignment piece. It's a sort of systems alignment. The second part of alignment, you could say, is about alignment of people to that strategy. So let's assume again, because there's all sorts of organizations and flat ones and self-managed organizations out there, but let's just assume that there is a strategic frame, whether that's high quality or low quality is another matter, that people need to align to that. And I think employee communications has traditionally always been about how can you help share that context with people so they can align to the strategy. Then if we look at the social sciences and the research around that, perhaps I can go into that a bit later, there's this third level of alignment, which is about aligning people with each other, because there's the frame in which people, the strategic frame that I'm talking about, that you need, that people need to understand in a way together. But then there's a space within that in which people need to play and collaborate and interact. That space, if everybody's on a different page or interpreting things differently, then, you know, that's where the implementation of the strategy goes wrong. So the implementation of the strategy is all about people aligning with each other at the team level, say at the team level, because that's where they have shared goals. So they're actually sharing a context. Now, if you imagine that in terms of what comes first, alignment or engagement, you're hardly likely to be able to engage people to deliver to the strategy if they don't have a clear view together on what is that strategy and how are we going to collaborate to implement it. So the alignment piece has got to come first. And I would argue that engagement is in many ways a consequence of good alignment, assuming that the organization has something that people want to align and engage with.
But
if it's not a nice proposition or people aren't motivated, they may be aligned, but they're not going to be engaged. So assuming that there's something that can motivate people, you have to have a degree of alignment so that everybody understands, well, what's the vision? What's the strategy? What's our team purpose? And how are we going to get there? Okay, now I can engage with delivering on that. Now I can engage with applying myself and bringing myself to work in a way that will help to advance that mission. And that's my role. Whatever that is. And I would argue out of alignment comes engagement, comes collaboration, comes effectiveness.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'd say is definitely a starting point.
I totally agree. I mean, it raises all sorts of questions and thoughts in my mind around that. I mean, particularly, I like the way you've broken that down, you know, so the sort of strategic intent, you know, we've got to kind of have a joined up organization, things have to align with themselves, which isn't always the case, as I'm sure you probably recognize and see yourself. Then we've got to kind of align our people to that, but then we've got to align people amongst each other. And I mean, I'm guessing none of those are easy, but of the last one, I guess aligning people with each other, particularly in an age where we are rightfully being encouraged to embrace diversity and different ways of doing things and different approaches, my question, I guess, is how do you reconcile that, where we want to have diversity and we want different ways to different people to do things in different ways and bring themselves to work and do their own thing in a considered way, but then we want them aligned as well. So how do those two things fit together? Because that, for me, I don't think it's a contradiction. I think I can see how the two fit together. I'm just interested from your point of view as someone who's kind of immersed in that perspective.
Yeah, well, alignment definitely isn't everybody thinking the same thing. We don't want everybody to just kind of memorize a message, because that's not really going to have them internalize it. People have got to make sense of things in their own ways. And they can verbalize things in their own ways too. I mean, we don't want to breed a load of parrots, right? So, but alignment isn't about people thinking the same thing. It's about cognitive and behavioral compatibility. And in order to, and it's almost like, I wouldn't want to use the word negotiation, let's use the word dialogue, but it's almost like that when people have points of view or interpretations of things as they bring their unique selves to work, there will be deviations away, and there will be less common ground and more differences between what people think. And it's at the point at which those differences become conflicting is a real problem. And the only way to avoid that is for people to engage in conversation that is addressing the real issues, that is healthily challenging each other, holding each other to account, managing conflict well, not being offended and thinking that it's an affront to the personal relationship if people do have different points of view, and being able to also then respect each other, open up to each other's perspectives, and then agree to a team decision to do something, even when in some cases that may not be your own decision. So this is what the process of alignment actually looks like in organizations. It sounds like a very tall order, but we build that into the structure of our facilitated workshops so that people can put whatever needs to get onto the table, onto the table. A, they need to be aware of it first, but B, you need to put it on the table, have that kind of facilitated discussion, I'd say, and it doesn't need to take very long. In order for people to come to some kind of alignment. So again, that alignment is having moved from perhaps diverse opinions that could be conflicting into compatible opinions that are just moving in the same direction. The alignment can be about just information clarity. It can be about new ideas. It can be about, like I've said, agreeing to disagree and go with the eventual decision. There are all sorts of ways that people can align, but that needs to happen.
Yeah, yeah. No, I it really resonates with me. I mean, I think we have a lot of similarity in the way that we see this, you know, our role, or we see the role of communications as not being something, it's not about, you know, cascading information. It's about engaging people in those conversations and surfacing those misalignments and being able to resolve them in an adult way and live with them, or maybe to find a common area that's different to what we both believed before, but is actually something that we can both hold on to. And I was talking, it was interesting because I was with a client yesterday and we were talking, you know, and I was, and we're doing some work for them to help them, you know, I mean, when I look at your list there, I guess what we're trying to help them to do is to communicate, is align their people around that strategic intent. But also what I'm trying to get them to do is, I guess subconsciously, is because I didn't have your model in my mind at the time. It was also to get that alignment. And we were talking yesterday, they were talking about, you know, it's really important that our people understand that the business making a profit is not it's not something that we shouldn't be able to talk to them about. You know, it's not something, because it's a kind of a manufacturing type environment, and that it shouldn't be an off subject, taboo subject. They should feel great that we're making profit as a company. And I was going to say, yeah, okay, that sounds great, but let's put ourselves in their position and try and understand that maybe they see that where does that profit go, and does it actually, and so let's, if we can actually have a conversation about why profitability suits all of us and not just the shareholders and the senior managers, then surely that's a better place to be. And I think that, you know, it's that sort of level of alignment and empathy, I think, that organizations need to try and get. And you only really get there through having proper adult conversations with people, don't you?
How much of those sort of facets of effective dialogue that I was just talking about do you think existed in that client group that you were working with, in terms of being able to, you know, have healthy challenge and construct, respect each other's views and open up and, you know,
yeah, I think amongst themselves they did because they were, I mean, this was purely homogeneous sort of, you know, well, homogeneous to a certain extent, senior management team. So this was just them, you know, I was trying to help them to craft their message and their story and help, so we can help them to tell it. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because they weren't all aligned and, you know, there were points at which there wasn't consensus clearly, although superficially they made a few decisions on certain things. I could tell through body language and what people were saying that maybe they weren't, but you know, the time didn't allow us to really go into that. But I think, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And that's often one of the things that we find with our clients when, you know, and it's probably similar with yourself, is that, you know, maybe the senior leadership team or people will get you in and they think they're aligned and you just need to help them align everybody else. But then you actually find that they're not particularly aligned themselves. I don't know whether that's the case with you as well.
Well, and it also comes back down to this definition of what's aligned, because, you know, and you know, teams of people, regardless of whether it's at the boardroom or an operational level, they can have a discussion about what something means and what they intend to do. And it can be completely clear for them. And they may not realize that they're attaching all sorts of meanings to words and implicate and connotations of what things lead on to when things happen, that just will not be shared when a simple message then cascades to another team in a different part of the organization, who are expected to. And again, all what they're doing there is they're sharing part of a strategic frame, which is may or may not be received. So that's a risk.
Yeah.
As a message. But then there's that second part of engagement, was, well, how do people relate to that with each other? I know that sounds a bit complicated, but everybody's individuals who, and with their biases and their preconceptions and their diversity in the way that they understand things differently and what they happen to be open to while their brain is working at the time that the message was received, etc.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's so presumptuous, actually, to think that messages will mean something without being properly explored.
And I think one of the things that really typifies that for me, and this is one of my kind of not bugbears, but when I'm working with clients, something that I try and, you know, respectfully try and help them to sort of see the limit is this, you know, this concept of single word values. So I don't know whether you come across this, but you know, you'll use one word, you know, we'll have a list of maybe four or five words, which by, you know, well, the English language is, you know, they're traits that, you know, they're a collection of loads of different behaviors and sometimes could be defined completely in a completely opposing ways, and expect them to, you know, to be able to put those out there and everybody to sort of like understand what like telepathically what we mean by this single word. And I think for me that kind of typifies this. And we, you know, this again, I won't use the words particularly because I don't want to, you know, identify the client, but when you see those words and you actually interrogate, well, not interrogate, it's the wrong word, but you ask each of the people around that table to, you know, write down a sentence or a behavior that indicates that word in your mind, and then you get them all to share that and you see how different that those interpretations are, which is fine. But it's clearly flawed in terms of that's a way of aligning our people around a set of behaviors when we've clearly not got a consistent definition ourselves amongst ourselves. I mean, is that something you find as well with that kind of concept and that idea of, you know, we can just get everybody to understand these values and that instantly will get us some aligned behaviors across the organization?
Yeah, I mean, you ask even more specific questions. You know, what's the purpose of your team? What we're effectively doing by comparing the way that everybody sees things is testing them in a nice, in an anonymous way on, well, what is the purpose of your team? And then when you put the answers together, you can see, well, actually, how far apart were these people from what they've been discussing all along? And I think what's really interesting is that it's so easy for people to talk across purposes when they have a fundamentally different meaning about words, just because they're attaching meaning to those words and then just assuming that everything is said links to that. And you can go on for years like that. You know, companies and organizations can carry on for years with people not really seeing things in the same way, but just not knowing it. They're fundamental differences sometimes about that then lead to conflict. So misalignment, the definition of misalignment is in fact then conflict. What we're looking at is a whole big range of conflicts, large and small, from whether something ought to be filed in this folder, that's at the micro level, right up to, well, where are we what results are we trying, what outcomes we're trying to achieve together exactly. And how are we supposed to be doing that together? And who exactly is doing what? There's lots of levels of clarity, and people even use the word clarity in a sort of fairly clumsy way. You know, there's clarity on the vision. There's clarity on roles and responsibilities. There's clarity on how people will deliver together. I mean, what clarity are we talking about when we says this team, you know, this team doesn't have much clarity, or there's, it's not clear. What, you know, I think what Mirror Mirror does is just totally organize this whole thing. One of the reasons why I think alignment hasn't been much on the agenda before is because the world wasn't so complicated, you know, just a few years back. You know, the world wasn't as complex, and that people thought that, you know, that alignment just happens through conversation, because conversation is an alignment tool. It's just these days, I don't think it's effective enough, because people haven't got enough time and things are too complicated to manage and people are too diverse. And now we're all working in different places. So, you know, people didn't think that alignment was necessarily an issue, or that they thought that conversation would iron out. And it's almost like the frog in boiling water. If people are working in large organizations all the time, you kind of come into a fairly ambiguous, chaotic, dynamic environment. And that's just considered life, because that's what it's like when you've got, you know, lots of people working in different ways on the same thing. That's just the way it goes. But to me, it was just so messy. I just wanted to get it structured and organized. That's what we've done.
I mean, I hadn't thought about this before, and so this is a bit of a kind of a curveball question, I guess. But one of the, I mean, I've always been fascinated by this idea of, you know, clarity of intent. So I don't know if you've ever come across the word. He's a military historian, a guy called Stephen Bungie, but he talks about it's called the art of action, and he uses the parallel that, you know, a lot of you know, traditional armies were all, kind of the sort of stereotypical orders coming from the back and taking hours to get to the front line. And by the time they get there, they kind of, you know, the situation's evolved beyond the point of being, the orders being completely obsolete, hours old, that sort of thing, to the kind of modern, or, you know, kind of sort of turn of the century, where, you know, it was all about making sure everybody has clarity over the objective that we're trying to achieve, but giving them flexibility and, you know, within certain guidelines to be able to deliver that objective in the best way they seem fit. I'm not always a massive fan of military analogies, because they don't always work in corporate life, but I do like that idea of, you know, particularly, I mean, I've spoken to lots of people on as clients, but also in the podcast, you know, people who've talked about, you know, as long as people know what the right thing to do for our customers at the end of the day, you know, we give them the freedom, the ability to be able to do that. So that's kind of, it is alignment at a strategic kind of outcome level, but it's not about directing them to sort of minute pieces of detail. I mean, how does that fit in with the kind of work that you do, that ability to flex and adapt in a very ambiguous, fast-moving environment which most organizations operate in?
Right. So we spoke about the strategic frame that people are provided with. And then we spoke about the space within that they would then get to implement. And I think the relationship between those two very much depends on the need of the organization. And I used to go around, I used to think that, you know, the hierarchical command and control type organization is evil, and that empowerment is the future. But we did an entire webinar on it and got some expert speakers, and it was really amazingly struck me that actually, the very hierarchical organization done well is extremely useful, because then the frame is very, very clear, and messages can go back up to the frame very, very quickly. Now, Agile has taken off in the sense that there are so many more organizations that need to change very quickly that there's no point in trying to get to try and get employees to provide feedback that will go up the chain and influence the strategic frame and that down again. And it's basically changed the way that some organizations see the relevance of the strategic frame and how it works for them. But even so, you've still got a choice of two things. It's what are we given and what do we play with? And the however that's managed within the organization is what it is. Now, Mirror Mirror doesn't go into an organization to advise at the strategic level to say, we think that your strategic frame should be more flexible, or that you should give people more space to play, or it's not strong enough, because that's not what we do. We focus very specifically on alignment to in the context. That consulting piece at the strategic level is a different piece. But when you go into companies, you can very much see how well is it working, actually. So we can provide the feedback up, at least, that this is what people, because we actually do ask people how well are they supported by the organization in being aligned and effective, because that's part of alignment. It's part of team alignment in terms of implementing the strategy. That's what this is all about. And we can pass that feedback back up the organization to say, this is how well your guys on the ground are thinking that your leaders are doing in terms of enabling them, which I'm very much a believer in. So that's how it relates to us.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that context is really important because for some organizations, they have it structure and order and having a proper set of processes that are deployed consistently are absolutely right for them. And I think to assume that everybody has empowered to just decide how they do everything is not, I don't think I'd be on an airplane where the kind of pilot wants to, is free to sort of decide how he's going to do his safety checks and that sort of thing. He or she's going to do their safety checks. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's absolutely context specific. I want to talk a little bit about mental models because we've not talked about that, and I know it's a key part of this concept. And I know we've maybe alluded to it, but we've not talked about it explicitly. This idea of the fact what we're trying to do here is to we need to acknowledge that everybody has different mental models, and you've touched upon this a little bit. I just wanted to explore this a little bit more explicitly. So, mental model sounds very kind of academic and scientific, but tell us a little bit what we mean by mental models and how does mental models fit in with this idea of alignment and kind of getting what we want, which is engaged, happy people who come to work and can give everything they can, and how does mental models fit into that?
Yeah, well, the way I understand it, having done a bit of reading around it, is that it's quite an accessible topic because it's just there's a sort of chain of logic and chains of logic that sit in everybody's brains about how they understand the world to be. So, for example, if you were always given chocolate, for example, when you, walked around the block, you would think, you would just have this built-in thing in the back of your mind, perhaps from that sort of activity as a child, that walking around the block is good and you'll get rewarded from it. And every experience that we have builds up into a sort of frame of logic, of thousands and thousands of strands of logic about how the world works, what's our place in it, how everything operates in our workplace, all our relationships with our friends, our entire world. And the way that we understand it is made up of a bunch of logic that we've either learned or created or whatever. And some of this logic is flawed, of course. And it's quite interesting because people who do coaching will say that when some people need to relearn something, that they're effectively having to unpick, find the bit of logic that did make sense to them at the time but doesn't make sense to them in the world somehow, find that, and then rejig it so that it fits better into the world and gives them a better result. So if you imagine sort of 10 people in a team, they've all got their mental models. And I think I likened it at one point to a house. Your mental model is your house in your mind. It's always there. And you've got a house for, work, house for home, house for family, house for, a room for work, home, family, et cetera.
Yeah.
So when you're working with, say, a colleague, and they think that the walls of the workroom, say the study in the house, are wallpapered, and you think that they're painted, you're not really seeing it in the same way, and that might not matter. I mean, who cares? But when these differences in mental models do matter, i.e., but I thought we were going to deliver it by this time, or well, we always do it like this, or well, if we do this, then that will be the result. There's lots and lots of little, things going on in our brains. And it's when those things conflict between people that you're getting that there's a misalignment. And like I said, most of it doesn't really matter, but there are some key ticket items that really people really need to reflect on in order to be able to iron out the conflict or avoid the risk of misalignment when it plays out longer and longer and longer. So alignment is a kind of opportunity, if you like, to get better results from having compatible, remember the word compatibility, compatible mental models in regard to their shared context. And it's an avoidance, it's a risk avoidance kind of mitigation process to stop things going wrong from when the mental models do conflict. And that's when alignment from what's going on in people's brains. And what was the sort of one of the penny drop moments for me was that the way that people behave is part of a mental model as well. Mm. Not just cognitive, it's also behavioral. How do I behave as a result of, you know, understanding behavior and understanding sort of patterns of behavior is also part of a mental model. And if you think about it, in organizations, you've got comms deals with what we understand and HR deals with behaviors. And, you know, why are those separate? They're not separate.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So that's the mental model piece and why it's actually completely fundamental to alignment, because we're aligning the relevant parts of mental models for delivery.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, yeah, it ties in with a lot of, I mean, I've not studied any of these to any great depth. So I'm not in any way purporting to be an expert in them. I mean, I'm kind of a very, very kind of light touch amateur when it comes to like things like NLP and things like, you know, when you look at and deconstruct how, and it may not be NLP, I may be thinking of something else, but it's that basically that whole kind of chain of events in my life that have led me to a certain point of conclusion. The fact that, you know, there's so much going on in my brain, I need to simplify my outlook on the world into some very sort of simple principles that you know, judge the way I see things and the decisions I make, you know, what prejudices I might have, what biases I might have, or how I interpret certain situations, or all that sort of sum total. So I get that, and we've all got that stuff going on in our heads. I guess for me, the challenge, for obviously from an internal communication, from an organization, and if you're working in a big organization, is that you know, and I know you're not proposing this, but to sort of analyze each of those individual biases is really difficult. So we have to aggregate them in some way together and there are group norms and sort of subcultures and that sort of thing. So how do you go about really kind of understanding those mental models in a way that you can actually work with them and not just lumping people into kind of stereotypes, you know, thinking, oh, they're all those people work in the factory, therefore they're all going to be only worried about money. They're going to kind of want to put as little least work in as possible, you know, and all of those sort of horrible sort of stereotypes that aren't particularly helpful. How do you, and I guess you're going to say talk to them and find out, how do you do that on a scalable, you know, on a scalable basis?
Well, yeah, so there's, I haven't studied mental models, apart from the research that we've done to build up the basis of the design of Mirror Mirror. The concept in the end is quite simple. And I think it's interesting when people look at psychometrics and when people look at individuals, it is interesting. Mm. And I think it can definitely help with advancing team collaboration for people to understand each other better. But I think fundamentally what people in teams and probably mainly do understand these days is that people just are different, and to respect differences and to be open to whatever those differences are. They don't necessarily need to know what color everybody is or how everybody's personalities break up into sort of the eight different Myers-Briggs categories or anything. But what we do is, you know, if you imagine that there's layers, there's fundamentally how people's are motivated. Then on top of that is values, and then and beliefs. Sorry, and then on top of that, they have actions. What ultimately this sort of culminates is the way that people see the world.
Yeah,
we don't get involved in all of the understanding how people are fundamentally. We just want to know, how do they see what's happening in the team, so that we can understand what is happening in the team. And if you measure that, you can then understand what needs attention in order for people to better align when you compare how they see things. So we ask a whole load of questions that are as unbiased as possible. And I don't think we can be completely unbiased because questions that we ask, but it's a whole load of qualitative and quantitative questions, asking people to rate and write out in as they would express it, answers to a whole load of questions about the team. It's not about themselves. It's irrelevant. Mm. Alignment is irrelevant to the individual because you can only alignment is just between people. So we only ask questions about what's happening within the team, like, do you see that this team can discuss difficult issues and questions?
Mm.
So it's not about whether that person feels that they can, because that's irrelevant. It's does that happen in your team? So we're actually asking about their context and the people in the context so that we can get a handle on what's going on. And we divide our work into two parts. One is to analyze or to assess what is in terms of how people perceive it. And the other is to then use the dialogue and use the data of what is to form then what next. And so we were saying, well, of these low-rated behaviors, which ones are the most important for your team with its unique needs to improve? What would happen if you did nothing? Which scores need to change? How do you think you would change this particular behavior score if that's what you'd identified? So it's really taking a back-of-envelope 80-20 approach to say, all right, there's all these alignment gaps. Who cares about those? What's most important for this team in terms of their work together? Because it's the team first. So it's a real emphasis on the team first. And there's a whole load of sort of a dark side of alignment, if you like, where people are intentionally or unintentionally not putting the team goals first because of a whole load of reasons, like they fear their fear for their job, or they are they don't want to look incompetent, or they are aiming for a promotion, or, you know, a whole load of stuff. But it's quite difficult to maintain that in an authentic way when you're literally in an effective discussion with somebody about what the team goals and where the team is going. You know, we may never find out about a lot of that sort of dark side in our work. But I think what we do is we put forward all of the ways that we think teams can, that we know from research that teams can behave more effectively through learning behaviors and psychological safety, etc. That's what we're using, and that's what we're focusing on as a way to move people in that direction without necessarily naming it.
One of the things you've talked about a couple of times and mentioned, and I know when I've heard you speak before, is part of this, and is a key part of this, is this concept of dialogue and how important that is in helping us to understand and to influence mental models. And I think we probably both agree that, you know, traditionally internal communication, not just internal communications, but OD and employee engagement sort of is all often been around, you know, going back to your original model, has been around that kind of, you know, stage two, which is aligning people to what it is we're trying to do. It's that very much that kind of broadcasting mentality. I mean, you clearly dialogue and discussion is very, very integral to the work that you do. How do we help the profession? And I know you work across a range of professions. I'm sure you've got many different types of clients within, you know, in terms of the interfaces you have within organizations. But how do we help them to understand? Because I think there's a reluctance sometimes to engage in those that dialogue, isn't there? There's a worry about what we'll uncover, and, you know, there's a little bit of kind of just burying our head in the sand and pretending everybody's aligned, and then we won't have to worry about it. I mean, how do you see the internally organizations embracing the dialogue and but then also being able to having the skills, I guess, to be able to manage that? And I know that's something you kind of help them with the work that you do, but I guess some of that, sometimes at some point in the future, they will need to be able to be self-sufficient to a certain extent on that themselves. Is that, would you agree?
And this just made me, your question made me realize that there's a part of your previous question I didn't answer, which is about scaling up. I mean, we've got a tool that was developed in conjunction with the Rotterdam School of Management, and they're able to run a very quick survey to identify which teams are aligned with the strategic priorities of the organization, which then maps out into a visual to show which teams need attention. So we wouldn't right. say everybody in an organization necessarily needs Mirror Mirror, but we would say that certainly where you understand that teams are not aligned, it's a good idea. Now, you can still say, oh, but dialogue, how are we going to do that with all of our teams? It doesn't have to take very long to run a survey for 20 minutes. I think it's 25 minutes max. And then do 2x2-hour workshops, which and the value of that can be so high compared to not doing it and trying to find some other intervention that's, I don't know, a technical solution. I mean, there just isn't a technical solution to replace dialogue at this point in time. That's the kind of scaling thing. Remind me where we were on the other question.
No, so yeah, the other question was around the, you know, how do we raise the profile of dialogue and help encourage the internal communications community to you know, I'm not saying that but I think there is a mindset around still that their role is to create great content and push that out into the organization. And I think we rely on, I think that the principles that we stick to rely on great conversation, dialogue and discussion. How do we help organizations to value that? And also how do we help them to create a level of self-sufficiency in that they are managers? You know, I'm thinking frontline managers, senior managers are comfortable sitting in a group of people and talking about alignment and how aligned we are and being able to have a kind of grown-up conversation about that without having to worry about what lid they're going to take off Pandora's box, I guess.
Well, yeah, there's the Pandora's box, but I can just imagine the reaction to the word dialogue. You know,
yeah.
Like, oh my God, really? You know, we haven't got time for that. You know, where are we at? And there's a lot of cynicism about all of these other meetings that are, you know, what's the difference between talking, conversation, dialogue, discussion? It's all lumped in one box. And everybody's just kind of like, well, you know, we have so many, I'm on so many meetings, I've just got work to do. I mean, what's a dialogue going to do?
Mm.
What we as communicators need to do is to recognize that facilitation of a dialogue is a key competence and a key skill set that we can have and bring structure and effective dialogue to life. I mean, you know, actually having people sitting in a room. It helps when you've got the data, of course, which is what the part that we add. But actually having people in a room who have left status at the door, who, you know, dialogue isn't something that internal communications can do. It's only something they can facilitate because people need to reciprocate in a dialogue for it to be a dialogue. And they need to be present in a way that promotes dialogue. So you are listening, asking people why, being open, respecting others, not putting yourself forward as a representative of a group, but just talking on your own behalf. And all of these things that make up an effective dialogue, if that is in the room, if dialogue, you know, people can easily see the results, but it's so often not in the room. And the internal communications kind of workforce, if you like, isn't going to make that happen by themselves. And I think what's been missing really is a structure. It's actually putting some time aside to say, we're going to look at the data and where we're at. We're going to spend 2 hours here and 2 hours there and really making it a solid offering rather than just a dialogue. Because
we're going to have a chat. Yeah,
it's got to be structured well, and it's got to bring in, for a start, psychological safety, so people can open up and start to respect others and bring themselves to it. And so, you know, I think without a proper structure, I can quite imagine the cynicism.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree, and I agree with that core competency thing around, you know, as I think I mentioned to you before, I used to work in an organization where it was a core competency. You know, we trained frontline managers to be able to sit down with their team and be able to facilitate conversation. It wasn't, you know, necessarily alignment conversations, but I guess it was because it was talking about performance and what we need to do in order to be able to deliver that and finding out what was stopping us. So, you know, but I agree. It's totally, it needs to be part of, you know, that kind of skills matrix or competency framework. I'm conscious of time and I could talk to you about this all day. I want to kind of just finish off because I think you it's clear to me you're on a mission. and you know, you said at the beginning, you're not kind of sure whether employee alignment is the right term, but regardless of whether it's the right term or not, I think we kind of get what it is that you're trying to do. What is it? What is it that we need to do in order to raise the profile of employee alignment within our organizations and not just see, you know, looking at your three-phase model earlier, make sure that we're looking at alignment from all of those three levels and not just skewing it towards one that's kind of our comfort zone and that's what we've always done when it comes to our definition of alignment. How do we broaden that definition of alignment with our organization, but also how do we build awareness that actually, you know, of what we said earlier, that it actually alignment is a precursor to all these other things that we're sort of spending lots of time on, like engagement and happy and contented workforces and people with a sense of belonging, that sort of thing. How do we raise the profile of that? And I know that's a kind of mission that you're on at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of stuff out there that everybody knows is true, that makes a lot of sense, that's really simple, that just kind of floors the old-fashioned way of doing things. So, for example, if you were to say, look, people need to make sense of things for themselves, dialogue is an essential part of establishing shared meaning about something new.
Yeah.
He's going to say, no, it's not. I mean, it just isn't, right? And then, you know, people will jump to assumptions about what's happening around them because that's what the human brain does. We know that from neuroscience. So it's especially important in remote circumstances, in complex situations, that these assumptions are checked and surfaced. So that means reflection is important. So it's very difficult for the internal communicator, employee communicator, to come up with these statements, but without point to it. And so therefore, we've got to do this. And it's very difficult for me sitting on this podcast, trying not to sound like I'm just selling, because this is why I came up with we came up with Mirror Mirror here at in the Netherlands, and I would advocate that just like you need a structure to hang a conversation on, you need a tool to identify the alignment gaps so that you've got the right things to talk about in the right way.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can say to you at the moment is, well, find out if people are interested in training as a facilitator of Mirror Mirror. It was free. It's free this year. There's only one more training course left, by the way.
Right.
It doesn't cost that much. We're not out there to just go and make a complete killing. We want to get this. So who wants to be trained as a Mirror Mirror facilitator? Who wants to know about the alignment gaps? If somebody's genuinely intrigued to know, okay, let's have those difficult conversations. Where do we start? Then that's what Mirror Mirror is all for.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't... There are some other sort of online tools that I don't think are as deep, because they don't get into the qualitative data about context. They're quite generic. But there are tools and there are ways to structure and make and bring the sense that I'm talking about to the world of work. So here's another piece of sense. You know, misalignment is conflict in how people think of behave, and much of it is unknown, conscious, and invisible. Now, that's a sentence that nobody's going to really disagree with. But how is that actualized in the working world right now? And I think we're still working off a kind of construction in our minds, a construct in our minds about how things are, because we're responding to our sponsors who are paying us and putting us in roles that we are sort of bound to. It's using influence to redefine what that role means in context. You know, what is it about the research in the world that brings us to a reality of, if that's the case, let's do something different. And persuading people that it doesn't have to be expensive, doesn't have to be difficult, and doesn't even have to be confronting. People, it's far more scary to think about, let's look at our own alignment gaps, than it actually is.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's been really, really interesting. As I say, I could probably carry on for another hour or so, but I can't. I'd like to probably get back to some of these points, and maybe we'll get you on again in the future, maybe to delve into another one of these areas in a bit more detail, because it's fascinating to me. I'm going to talk a little bit in a minute about how people can find out more about you and links that we can put in the show notes. Before we do that, though, Lindsay, I just want to wrap up by asking you the question I ask all of my interviewees, and I know you're prepared for this, it's something that even I know we've only just met, so anything you tell me will be kind of relatively new, but even people who know you reasonably well, maybe worked with you before or you know, kind of sort of in your close proximity, who don't, something that you you know about yourself but they don't know about you, that you're willing to share with our audience today. So I'll hand over to you.
Okay, I'm going to fess up to something. And I've got butterflies about this one because it's quite big.
Come on.
In 2004, and I'm embarrassed about this, it's not on brand for Mirror Mirror. I was on the very first series of The Apprentice.
In the UK?
Yeah, it was awful. It was awful. I mean, I
thought I recognized, when I saw your picture on LinkedIn, I recognize you, and I can't remember, I can't think where from. And so, because I've been an avid watcher of The Apprentice throughout every series. So
how can you be? That's awful show. I mean, the interpretation of what business, I just really believe in giving things a go. And I thought the concept was amazing. I thought, God, this is a fantastic concept. Won't that be great? Because I'd never seen it before.
Yeah.
But when I got on it, and then I saw the way that they'd interpreted it, and I got fired second as a project.
You were second. I was going to ask when you went. Yeah, yeah. No, I watch it because it's great car crash TV. It's no more, you know, I totally agree. It's not how business, or no, not my idea of how business is done, but it's, you know, it's people watching stuff, isn't it? It is horrible at times, but also it's quite amusing.
But I mean, had the example that's setting and what people are learning about what business looks like, I just think it's just like, oh my God. So anyway, I mean, it was,
I've got to ask, what was the task that you got fired on, what were you doing, and what was everybody else meant to be doing that they didn't do that led to you getting fired?
Oh yeah. So I volunteered stupidly to be the project manager on a project that was to design a children's toy. And so we organized a children's toy, and it wasn't chosen as the winning one. And so I went into the boardroom, and I think I was a bit kind of I talked back a bit. I sort of said, well, I did my best, thinking, how can you fire me for doing my best? And then,
yeah. And what was the toy? Because I might remember it from the toy. And because they've done a few things like that in the part of the series. What was the toy? What did you invent? Can you remember?
We designed two toys in parallel to see which one would work out. One was a robot that I couldn't see that there was a differentiator on, but the other one was called Secret Signals. And it was cards that kids could use in class to signal each other.
Yes.
Each other.
I do remember that. Yes. I would have to go back to YouTube and find that, because I'm sure it's on there.
Well, I really, really thought that was a fantastic idea. And I thought, oh my God, I would have loved to have had that when I was at school. So we put that forward, but he didn't see it. And, yeah,
he didn't have the vision. Well, it's kind of linked to, I'm not quite on the quite the same scale, but I was on the weakest link, and I was the weakest link. I was not the first round. I made it to the fourth round before I got kicked off. So there you go. We've both got that sort of showbiz heritage.
Hey, there we go. Then you got to do it, haven't you? Well, I mean, you don't have to, but I just think it's, I don't know. I think it's worth giving things a go.
Oh yeah, definitely. No. Well, fantastic. Well, that is a brilliant one. That's going to go down in my scrapbook of amazing things that people have said at the end of interviews. So, I freely admit I do watch The Apprentice, because it is so far removed from what people should and well, yeah, very 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 stereotypical, to say the least. So look, Lindsay, where can we find out more about you? Where can we find out more about your work? I've got your website to put on the link. I've got your own LinkedIn profile. I've got you. There was a white paper that you were going to sort of share, I believe, that we were going to be able to put into the show notes. We did discuss that in the pre-interview conversation, but I can't remember what that was now.
Well, there's the website is mirrormirroralignment.com.
Yeah.
And there's a resources page that has a download link to the white paper, and we're also doing a webinar on the 4th of December. I don't know if this is going out before then or not.
Yeah, we might have missed that, I believe. But okay. Well, we can share that for you on other social media platforms, because this will probably go out after that. But okay. Well, no, but we'll definitely put the link into your website and the white paper as a separate link as well. And we're okay to put your email address in there if anyone wants to contact you. Is that all right?
Or they can go through the contact form on the website.
Or go through the contact form on the website. Okay, that's fine. Well, that's absolutely brilliant, Lindsay. I really enjoyed that. As I said, it was something that I my ears pricked up when I heard you on that other podcast, and it was like, right, it sort of all makes sense now. And I do think there's a lot of overlaps with what I do and my worldview, but also I'm really interested in how the level of detail that you go into with this whole area of alignment. I think it's fascinating. And thank you for sharing your insights with us. I think it's been really interesting. It's really piqued my interest anyway.
Great. Well, it was great to be on, and let's talk afterwards about collaborating.
Absolutely. I'm all for that. Let's watch this space.
Good.
Cheerio. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ideally, everyone in your organization would be on the same page. They'd be facing in the same direction and towards its vision and goals. However, in today's fast-moving world, as we all know, it can be really hard to get employees to see the big picture. For example, what are we aiming for? How are we going to get there? And how does my role contribute? When your employees don't see the big picture, they can make the wrong decisions, they may feel less of a sense of belonging, and they may not fully contribute towards your organization's objectives. So how do you consistently put large numbers of people in the picture in a way that helps them understand what your organization is trying to achieve, but also do that in an engaging and effective way? At the Big Picture People, we combine visualization, discussion, and interaction to fully engage your employees in the organization's big picture. We create light bulb moments for your employees, and we bring your values, your strategies, your objectives, and your change processes to life in a really rich, clear, and visual way. We also show your employees the complexity of the world that you're operating in and how their role contributes towards organizational priorities. So if you see the value of putting your people in the picture, head across to thebigpicturepeople.co.uk and book a free 30-minute consultation call via the link on our homepage. So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. Hope you found this episode useful. We'd love to get your feedback and thoughts about the show. So, and also any questions or ideas that you've got for things you'd like us to cover in future episodes. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form on our website, which is engagingic.com. Also, you'll be able to sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, new episodes, and also anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications or employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And also you can subscribe to it via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you know anyone else who might be interested in the show, please distribute it to them. Please let them know about it. We want to try and grow a community of people here who are contributing to the show, giving us new ideas for episodes and things that you'd like to cover in future. So thank you very much.